Hello, and welcome to Down the Slope. As ever, I'm Ewan, and this week I am joined by Harry and Liam. How you doing, boys?
I got the nod, Liam. I'm all right, thank you. Just doing away. Had a barry time on Friday, but apart from that, just chilling.
Good stuff, mate. Liam, what about you?
I'm doing well. Like made a recovery for Friday night and from last week's antics in general, and just ready to do it all over again tomorrow night for Scotland versus Croatia.
Absolutely. Greg is on a leave of an extended leave of absence after our break last week. He's still recovering from our jaunt down to London. We only got back up the road late yesterday. Unlike me, he's obviously not connected because he can't hack it. Nah, I'm joking, but he'll be back next week. So, 2 weeks since we last recorded, obviously, other than the Scotland game, have either of you been up to much?
I think I was originally going to go down to England, but then by the time I looked at trains, it was far too expensive. So I thought I'd treat myself. I just had a couple of days off. Didn't really do much, eh? Life's still at the point where everything's not really open. It's not really open enough. But the thing is, right, the reason that they need to get rid of this COVID pish is because I had such a good night on Friday. It's literally the best night I've had since they've locked everything down. It just felt like a bit of normal back in life, and I think it's genuinely what life's all about, just being stupid and slightly intoxicated, maybe more than slightly, with your mates. Like, I get that it's a whole pandemic and that, but they just need to draw the line at some point, because every single time they're about to give us our freedom, they just come up with something else to prolong it. It's just annoying.
Yeah, I was interested in being in London at the weekend. Obviously, there's still restrictions and stuff, but it felt so different. I know, obviously, it was like a party atmosphere and stuff, but even like on the Saturday when we were down there, I remember the last bar that we were in, I vaguely remember asking the waitress what time they were open till, and it was like just whatever, I think they shut 12:30, but that was just their normal closing time. It wasn't like they were able to close normal time and stuff like that. There was no real worries. Tunes were blaring. I'd like, you could stand up, but you couldn't stand up with a drink in your hand. But you could stand up. You could stand up at your table, but no way a drink in your hand, all that. So still some oddities, but it was decent. And I was the same as you. I took last week off as well with Scotland game on the Monday, then flew to London on the Thursday. Well, but you, Liam, obviously you were at the Scotland Czech Republic game. How was that?
It was good. It was nice to be back in the stadium. First time in 16 months, a fucking long time. Forgotten how much I miss it. Forgotten how much I missed the whole thing before, just meeting up with people and having a few beers and singing daft songs. I'm like Harry, I just really perked up for having something last week that was going on. It felt like a wee bit of normality back. And for as long as the game was 1-0, actually, the atmosphere was cracking in Southampton for there only being 12,000 or however many end up in there in the end. It was really good. Good day out. Like Harry was supposed to be going down to London, but then my mates, a couple of them who listened to this podcast, decided to unbook the hotel without consulting me. I've still not forgiven them for that yet, because my FOMO at the weekend was something else, just not being there and watching all the scenes, like seeing everybody on the videos and that. I was just buckled watching you all make fannies of yourself, because I knew I would be right in amongst it doing the same thing. I was loving watching you. It was brilliant. And I did feel like I missed out not being down there, but it was still like terrific night. Friday night was class. Fair enjoyed myself, and here we are Monday again, and it's like you say, I'm going to get to do it all again tomorrow night, so hopefully get a good result, because I just want to extend the party for as long as we possibly can, because
absolutely,
we'll have a couple of knockout games of football.
We've all got on to chat about Scotland and lack of Hibs activity, I guess, but I'd sort of told myself, was it the start of May when the restrictions sort of lifted? I was like, May will be mental. Have a couple of quiet weekends at the start of June, London, and that'll be it. And I think over the weekend I've decided we'll just continue to get on it as long as Scotland are in the Euros, and then when Scotland get chucked out, right, then we'll start behaving ourselves and go back to the gym and that. But I can't tell, is it because Scotland are in and Scotland are doing it, or is it a lot that tied in with the fact that you're having a laugh with your mates and everything like that? So were you both out in Edinburgh on Friday night? What was it like in and about town on Friday night?
was fucking bouncing. It really was. Like, it was, it did feel like it was somewhere close to normal. Like, we were still kind of glued to your table, but actually, like, the places were busy, they were rocking, people were singing, people were jumping about, bouncers were telling people to get down off the chairs, get down off the tables, all of that good stuff. Like, all, it just, it felt like a normal Friday night in a lot of respects.
I know, I won't name the place because I didn't want to bad name them. I'd name them on Twitter. But we were watching, like, everybody got there early because they were pretty much first come, first serve. They didn't take bookings. And then during the Croatia game before it, everybody was just having a sing-song and having a laugh. Everybody in the place, bar the people working there, were there for the football. Like, not a single person went out for, oh, I'll have a game of pool when Scotland are playing England. And then we were singing songs. The guy, Baldy, the guy that's running the place, turns the TV over. He's like, if you are singing during the game, then it'll get turned over during the game. And everybody's like, what is this Chewbacca on about, man? So then everybody was behaving. And obviously the national anthem came on for England. I start booing. Everybody else in the joint started booing as well. And then what do you call it? Every single time after that, anything English came on the TV, it was getting booed like mad. And then Micah Richards came on and everybody just kind of went quiet because we all kind of like him, eh? It was good. That's the thing I miss most about the atmosphere. Like, I woke up on the Saturday morning, I couldn't speak. Like, my voice was so scratched and messed up because I was screaming the whole night. Honestly, you would have thought we'd won 6-0.
I don't know if it's coming across. I'm like, oh, if it'll come across in the podcast, like, through the Zoom call or that, but my throat is fucking killing me. Like, wow. And just FYI, I know that can be a sign of COVID. I've had tests done. I'm safe. I've not before I interacted with my family and stuff, I had the test done and all that, so I've been safe enough, I guess. Final point before we actually get on to talk about the game and stuff, just for what you're saying about that pub owner or the manager or whoever he was. I don't know if you've seen, I think there was an Edinburgh Live article on it, and it was about the flight got turned back around when we were on the tarmac. That was my plane. A boy got launched off the flight as we were on it. So Edinburgh Airport was fucking bouncing, right? And the police were actually being really sound. Like, they weren't stopping anyone from doing anything. They were just like, make sure you got your mask on. And as you were getting on the plane, like, and actually the police came up and they started saying to everyone, like, EasyJet are threatening not to take this off. No, like, fuck. So everyone calmed down. Everyone got on the plane. Started to get a bit bouncing, and it was an Australian pilot, and he was, he came on the thing like 3 or 4 times, and it was like being back in school, and like you were threatening with your golden time getting taken off you or something. Like, it was just being so stupid. And then so a boy got chucked off, and I believe, and it was the other end of the plane, but from one of my mates who was down there, entirely rightly so, like fully deservedly chucked off the plane. Flight gets on, and then head cabin crew person, as we land at Gatwick, and he says, oh, thank you very much for, like, those of you who were respectful, blah, blah, blah. And in all honesty, like, the flight was okay, like, after the first 10, 15 minutes on the tarmac, nothing really went on. And then he just turns around and goes, come on, England. And if you ever want to insist, and then, so obviously everyone goes fucking tits, as expected, as he fucking, he must have knew that was coming. He then goes, there's children on the plane, please don't shout, like, mate, what do you think was going to happen here? Like, but, just like, read the room, lad, read the room. But, and then it then commenced a very good weekend. Funnily enough, the boy that got chucked off the plane was on my flight back up the road on Sunday. So he obviously found another way of getting in. But hey-ho. So, Hibs, last 2 weeks since we last recorded, new kit, and Fraser Murray's left. Don't think anything else has happened at all.
When was the last time we've had a player play at an international tournament before? Because obviously Kevin Nisbet's played, didn't he? That's a good one.
They signed De La Cruz on the back of a tournament, I think, maybe.
I think he maybe was at Villa by the time he played at the World Cup for Ecuador. So I don't think that one would count.
Morgan Flaroff had left by the time he played for Honduras, didn't he?
Aye.
Yes. I can't think.
Eduardo Hurtado.
Honestly, I don't have a clue.
Do you mind the Hungarian boy that Bobby Williams signed? Janos Matias. Maybe he sneaked in a wee appearance at Euros for Hungary. I don't think Yannick Zambernardi got in the France squad. I think he just missed out on a place at the 2004 Euros. So I don't think Zambernardi was there.
Best thing Hibs have done in the last 2 weeks, but it wasn't even Hibs, was when that guy was getting interviewed and they said to him, what's the score going to be tonight? 2-1 Hibs. that's hands down the best video from the entire weekend. I've watched it at least 150 times. Like, I just can't stop laughing. It's just so perfect. I've never seen a more perfect video in my life.
So up there, that 13th birthday party did in England, eh? That 13th birthday party in England is fucking... I've watched that in excess of 400 times. Eh? Every time you watch it, you notice something new as well, eh? And he's Michael Van Gerwen bouncing about in the background, like having a wee good time to yourself.
Oh, and then in part holy. Three, Mark, that Goldbridge gets involved as well, honestly.
I have to be honest, my favourite quote tweet of that was the 1 minute late when the waiter asks, tells you when to stop for the parmesan. Oh, Jesus. For those of you, if any of the listeners aren't sure what video we're talking about, we'll retweet it onto the page at some point when we've released the podcast. But Hibs, what are you making a new kit? I think I've seen two people that didn't like it or that weren't sure about it. And they were my mum and my sister, so I went in a huff with them for a couple of days because I fucking love it. Like, better than
I was so nervous for it being released as well. I was so nervous for it being released because I just felt like with how things have been since the cup final, I felt like if it was a bad kit, that would just be carnage. But then when it came out, it was one of the ones where I looked at it, I liked it the minute I saw it, but then the more I looked at it, the more images of the kit I've looked at ever since, I've grown to like it even more and more. And I am one of those sad bastards that pre-ordered it within about an hour of coming out. And I don't always buy kits. I really don't. Like, I'm not someone who religiously wears kits, certainly not like the current season's ones. But I was like, I've got to have that. It's so smart.
Yeah, definitely. I've not pre-ordered it, but I'll definitely be getting it. The only reason I didn't pre-order it is because I was in London. Because it was not on Thursday or Friday it came out, I think. And the video of the Leeds administrator? Or it's like, yes, we may have overspent, but we lived the dream. Well, that is fucking me looking at my bank account this morning, you fucker, let me tell you. So the Hibs kit can wait till maybe January sales or something, but it'll definitely be getting purchased at some point. It's made me quite excited for the away kit as well when that comes out, which I'd imagine will be sometime soon. Harry, what did you make of the home kit? Do you like it?
I really like kits that are a bit out there. Like, I ken it's horrible, but the example was just like, see that Mingan Hearts kit, the pink and yellow one. Like, if Hibs were to do something similar to that, I'd be all over it. I love ugly kits. I think they're banging. But this one's, like, abstract.
I don't mind
and
ugly
it's banging.
Kits if they look all right, but that was a fucking shit.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, but that's the thing. Like, obviously, it's Mingan and it's Hearts, so it's fine with it being Mingan. But if Hibs did replicate it to a similar extent, I would be getting it. That's what I'm saying. But nah, definitely, I'll be getting that top like it's banging. I don't see how you can have any issue with it at all. I think it just looks smart, the meaning behind it and stuff. Because am I not right in saying that on... like the Hibs badge is actually like placed in the heart of Edinburgh or something on the top. Aye. Like they've literally done everything so precisely. It's a shame because if we'd won the Scottish Cup, it would have literally been the perfect time to bring a kit like that out because everybody and their dog would have been buying it. I still think it'll do really well regardless. But yeah, and I'm happy with the kit. I think it's smart. Also, let's have the mini debate. I don't see any problem with people at any age wearing a football kit. Well, obviously, full kit, that's a bit much, but I don't see any problem with folk wearing a football top. I've never really understood the, oh, you're above 18, why are you wearing that? Like, I just think it's fine, personally.
I side with you on that. I've kind of come full circle on it, though, because there was a point in time in my life where I didn't wear tops at all to the games, and then or just at all, even to fives or that, I wouldn't wear a football top. I've kind of come full circle because I think now that like I'm like I was probably more concerned about what people thought at that point, and now I'm like,
yeah.
Why the fuck should I care what you think of me because I'm wearing a football top? Like, so I'm just going to wear it and I'm just going to embrace it. And like, if there's places in Edinburgh or whatever that didn't let me in because I've got a football top on, I'll fuck them. Like, they're not getting my business. Do you know what I mean? So nah, I'm fully behind people of all ages wearing football tops and all shapes and sizes as well. Like, if you're a big 30 stone heifer and you want to wear a football top that's a 5XL, good on you. Like, totally, wear it with pride. Like, I don't think it needs to be people who are just fucking going for the like muscle fit look with football tops, and where like everyone needs to just wear their colours with pride.
That's it. I think I'm probably the same as Liam. I don't know if it maybe came from like Liam said, no, you're not going to get out anywhere in town on a Saturday night wearing a Hibs top. So I think what age am I now? 24. I would say from sort of the age of, I think I've always ended up with the tops, but they were really just gathering dust, and that's sort of what's led to me not buying them over the last maybe year or two. And then rarely did, even when the ones I've had recently, they've more just been thrown on like in the house or that. I don't think I'd ever wear a Hibs top or a football top at all, really, unless it was a sort of, other than for like sport purposes or to the game. I think it's a bit strange when people, like, there was a boy with a Celtic top on flying up the road yesterday, and I was a bit like, fuck off, mate, but that's just because it was a Celtic top. So,
But see for me, like, if I'm just, like, running about, like, I didn't see the difference, like, just throwing a random T-shirt on and throwing a football top on. Like, if I'm going to the shops and that, I just need something comfy to wear. I'll literally just, like, I'll know, like, be like, oh, I'm wearing this top because I look so cool. I'll literally just, like, it's just, like, clothes to me, eh?
Just whatever you grab first, sort of.
I literally have no shame when it comes to being a weirdo. So if it makes me look like a weirdo, I don't care.
Right, keep your eyes out for Harry on the streets of Edinburgh. Last time I seen him, we went to Fazenda, a lovely restaurant, and they had a pair of dip dyed shorts and a dip dyed hoodie on, and they were entirely different fucking colours.
And I looked banging, and I had a great time, and I ate steak. So get it round you.
Nah, but I don't mind it. And you know what? I think as well, like, I was quite like seeing folk with Hibs tops on. Especially, I live in West Lothian, so it's quite rare, really. Even Greg lives in Curry. It's quite, he says, like when Greg McCune was on the pod, it's a lot more sort of Hearts through Greg's way. And through here, it's always Celtic and Rangers. And you see a volume of Celtic and Rangers tops. And I think this year's kit is definitely one that you're going to want to have. And I think it's quite an exciting start. It's probably going to be the best. I don't know if it'll sell as much as the Thank You NHS kits, but I think that had a reason behind it. That, you know what I mean? I think if you were to take the NHS kit out of it, I think this could be one of the best selling kits for a long time.
I'm going to make a bold prediction that it will outsell the Thank You NHS kit based on no scientific fact. I just think that it's a wee bit like the yellow kit we had last season. It's a wee bit of a collector's piece, just the way the kit's positioned and the detail that's gone into it. I'm not saying everybody out there collects kits. Clearly, a lot of people in my fucking Twitter echo chamber do, but like, I think there'll be a lot of people who just buy it for sentimentality. I don't think it's a kit I'll wear more than a handful of times, but it's probably one that I'll keep because I think it's cool as.
Yeah, I quite like the. I'm always very much on the emerald green side when it comes to the. Should a Hibs kit be emerald green or bottle green? But I like the flow. I've seen someone say it looks like you've walked out the sea with a T-shirt on, like you've walked out the water up to waist height, so it's a bit darker, but I like it. I think it's a really nice kit. Does it make you maybe want a more sort of classic, simple away kit when the time comes, or you would, because normally you might see a more out there away kit, and like we had the sort of pinstripe purple one the year before last, you find we'll see a maybe more classic looking away kit?
I'm quite binary in my Hibs kits. I like a green top with white sleeves and a white top with green sleeves, or just a white top for the away kit. I didn't mind the odd purple one here and there. Yellow, I'm not fussed for, but I do like the basically the reverse. But I suspect because there's a third kit coming, I think this could well be a white away kit. I think I might get my wishes just on the basis that there's a third kit. We usually get a third kit because we have to have an alternate to play against Celtic, don't we? Yeah, because we can't have a white and a green one for purposes of playing.
I might be wrong, but I think if you want to play in European football, you have to have a third kit. I feel like that's, I don't know if it's if you get group stages or something, but I feel like that's some mad rule that is, I'm sure that is a thing. I don't know if it's group stages or something you need that for. I may have just fucking made that up, but I don't fucking know. I'm just convinced that it's a thing. I don't know why. Harry, Fraser Murray left, we spoke about him fairly in depth in the last time that we recorded, looking at sort of transfer activity and what we think the club need to do and what they don't need to do over the summer. Was it a surprise to you when the news came that he signed for Kilmarnock on a 2-year deal?
Being honest, I can't really remember what I said about him. I think I was on the camp of he either needs to play or leave. So yeah. I stick by that, and he clearly wasn't going to play. So I'm glad that he's left, not like want him out the door, but the fact that if he's not part of the plans, it's good for him to get a move. I think that for a player like that, getting a regular start in the Championship will be good for his career. So I don't begrudge him going to Kilmarnock at all. I think that being part of a rebuild, as we know, being Hibs fans, a rebuild in the Championship is how you become a legend for a club. So if he can actually help that team get back up and maybe potentially make a cup run, because they look like they're making serious moves, like with some of the players that they're bringing in, because they've got that guy Naismith as well, did they not? So I think
Stephen McGinn's as well. Sorry, Stephen McGinn's left as well.
I think Murray, if he stayed at the club, was probably about sixth or seventh in the midfield pecking order. So it was an out move for both clubs, for both parties. Sorry.
Liam, I think we sort of landed on it. Would probably have been a toss-up between him or Stevie Mallon, really, for that sort of position along with Scott Allen. Do you think the fact Murray's away suggests that anyone that a Mallon might be staying, or might just two totally separate cases?
I think first of all, wish Fraser Murray well, because I think I would love to see him go and do well at Killian, have a great career, and I think because we retain an interest in any future transfer fees, I think it makes sense to wish him well from a financial point of view. I think the thing with Mallon and Allen, I understood that Mallon had a contractual fee agreed with Malatyaspor, or however you pronounce the Turkish team's name. So if they wanted to take him, then you know, I think he would probably go for that fee. So I still think it's a Mallon Allen debate rather than a Mallon Allen and somebody else debate, because I don't think we'll keep two of them at the club next season, to be honest. So if I was going to hedge my bets, I would say that I think it's more likely that Mallon will leave, because I think there's more value in selling Stevie Mallon than there is Scott Allen.
Yeah. Is there any tinges that's a bit disappointing to see Fraser Murray leave? I think from a career point of view and from a player point of view, we'd all say, look, it's good for him to go and play. But he's obviously, he looked good in spells coming off the bench, but it's probably a couple of years ago now. I think we all said that he needed to go on loan, but maybe he needed to go on loan season before last. And then last year maybe could have been the opportunity to see if he could have got in the first team. And I guess, do you think just Hibs are now at a stage where if we do want to compete regularly for sort of third place and cup competitions, that we probably need better than Fraser Murray?
It's really harsh, eh? But yes, like he needed to go to Dunfermline and pull up trees in the Championship in order to get into the Hibs team, and he didn't do that. He did okay at Dunfermline, I think maybe even slightly better than okay, but he needed to really go and do something special to force his way in the team. And the way that Gullen did a couple of seasons ago at Raith Rovers and then still didn't get into the Hibs side, didn't get meaningful playing minutes last season. So, you know, I think it is definitely the right move for the player. I also think it's the right move for the club, because it's another kind of wage, another body off the books. Because the squad's guys are still, it's like 25 or 26 players we've got on first team on the books for next season. So that's pretty hefty, I would say.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's enough chat about Hibs. There's not much going on, is there? So we'll be getting to the good stuff. Scotland have played two games in the last week. We've mentioned it already. Liam, you were at the game. What did you make of the Czech Republic performance?
It was just it was one of those games. It was a good performance, but unfortunately, it was just two lapses in the game that ultimately we paid very, very heavily for. We created enough chances to have scored at least a couple, maybe even more. I thought we retained possession. We moved the ball about a lot better than we have done against teams of that quality recently at home. So I came away from the game really disappointed, but actually within 24 hours, I'd kind of calmed down to the point when I was like, do you know what, that was actually a decent performance and there was some hope in there. I did think he had to make changes to the team against England, and he did that, but I'll not ruin talk about the England game, because I think someone else will do a much better job being really positive and upbeat and happy about Friday's result.
I think I'm the same. I think the Czech Republic game was disappointing. I'd actually, do you know the most disappointing? I think everyone was confident going in it because we beat them twice in the Nations League in the last year. I know one of the games was a sort against the reserve side, but I'm pretty sure the game we played them at Hampden was, I think it was that team pretty much that we beat, which is disappointing. But I was very much in the same train of thought as you. I thought we played okay. It sounds fucking so stupid because we conceded two goals. I actually thought we defended really well against Czech Republic. I felt like they had a shit ton of corners. I thought we defended them well. Obviously, it was a second phase of a corner that they did eventually score from, but I thought it was a really, both goals were really, really good play from Czech Republic. I felt like the first goal, it looked like an overload. It looked like Stephen O'Donnell should have got out quicker, but I don't think Stephen O'Donnell can get out quicker than he does. And I think 9 times out of 10, when we clear the ball for the corner, the guy that picks the ball up pops it back to the halfway line and then they play a long diagonal back into the box. Whereas the guy who was back for the corner commits and creates an overload. And it's a great header. And then obviously the second goal, again, you can pick into it as much as you want. Why is David Marshall maybe 10 yards further up than probably what he maybe should have been? Why did Jack Hendry shoot? We've lost Harry. I think sometimes you've just got to hold your hands up. Like, yeah, probably Scotland could have done a bit better for both goals, but as I more look into the games, maybe for the podcast, I try to lean more to the side of good goals as opposed to bad defending.
I think so. I think the shit goal is a fucking freak finish, like absolute freak finish. And you can analyse the decision that Jack Hendry takes to death, but you've put yourself in the shoes of Jack Hendry and you've just hit the crossbar. You're feeling good about yourself. You've got an opportunity to strike the ball. Okay, there's a defender in front of you, but you're thinking, just get the shot off and see what happens. Like, I know I would be in that position. I'd be feeling good about myself. I'd probably have hit it. The right decision was probably to play the pass to O'Donnell, but he goes for the shot, and I'm all right with that. Like, he also scored against the Netherlands just a couple of games before that. So I think the thing with Hendry, and we'll maybe come on and talk about this when we talk about the team against Croatia, because the potential that he might come back in, is he's one of these guys. Like, did you see that Si Ferry video that was doing the rounds a couple of weeks ago, where Si Ferry was talking about young guys in the game and wanting them to be confident with the ball, make things happen, pass them? And the number of people retweeting that and going, bang on, spot on, bang on the money. Jack Hendry is still a relatively young player. Like, I know he's not young, but relatively young player. He's in a big game, and he is. He's trying to do the right thing. He's been a centre half. He's been ambitious. He's trying to make something happen. Doesn't make the right decision, but doesn't mean he should get caned for it. And I think some of the reaction on Monday, just I think because there was so much build up to the game, I think some of the reaction on Monday was maybe just a wee bit over the top, criticising, particularly the criticism of Hendry. But I think, fair play to him for showing the ambition.
Harry, what did you make of the two goals? Obviously, I think you'd sort of just dropped off there. I think me and Liam have both sort of leant on the side of both very, very good goals as opposed to any glaring mistakes from Scotland. Obviously, you could analyse it and look at Hendry and Marshall for the second goal.
See, the thing, Will and he's absolutely mugged us off there. There's no need for him to come on the pitch and do that to us. I didn't think that the defending for the first, like, obviously O'Donnell should be tighter to him, but I think he rose very well, and I think it was a very good ball in the box. Like, as I've said a few times, every single goal you can pick a defensive mistake out, but sometimes it is just good attacking. And the second goal, like, obviously Marshall starts a bit too far off his line, but if you were to watch goalkeepers the entire game, they get bored and they do, like, they sprint from side to side in that at times, but you never see it because you're never concentrating on the keeper. Jack Hendry's thought, you know what, I'm frustrated. I want us to get a shot on target. It's not going to go in, but at least it'll get us some momentum if the keeper pushes it over the bar. Guy gets in the way and it falls perfectly to him. It's not on Jack Hendry at all. I put 0% of the blame of that goal on Jack Hendry's shoulders. And Marshall, it's just unfortunate. But to be fair, at least we've got some funny memes out of it as well. Like, some of them have been cracking it.
See, when you're talking about goalies doing crazy shit, like, you ever fucking watch Bobby's Lamal at a live game and he's standing on the fucking edge of the 12-yard box doing, like, acrobatics, like, doing his, like, gymnastics routine off the crossbar and that, because he's bored, eh? Like, it's so bang on about goalkeepers, because they're all, like, most of them are crazy, eh? So, like, and maybe something to keep their brain function.
Czech Republic had the ball in our half that game. Like Marshall, especially second half, Marshall had nothing to do. Like
I think am I right in saying he maybe had a good save right at the start of the second half?
Right.
And then I think after that, and then I think after the second goal, there was probably 5 minutes of the game where we sort of shot ourselves a wee bit. I think that was the thing, wasn't it? Like you said, and I think Henry, like I think Liam, you mentioned there, he just hit the bar. And we were playing well, to be fair, at this point. And the atmosphere, like you mentioned earlier on at the start of the podcast, and the atmosphere was good. It's just got dragged into it a bit. How many times do you... Tottenham have set shots for stupid positions all the fucking time. Like you said, he scored a couple of weeks ago, so he's feeling good. And it was deflating. It was like, fuck. But I think, like Evan, and I don't know about you, is it sort of took me till... I sort of forgot about football for Tuesday, Wednesday, and I really started getting back in the mood for it when I was sort of Thursday morning, knowing like I was flying down on Thursday night and stuff like that. And then the England game comes and you see the team and I felt good. I know people said McTominay shouldn't. I think Scott McTominay has to play it right centre half for Scotland. I like Jack Hendry as well, but I think Scott McTominay and Kieran Tierney are the exact type of players you need in the side of back three. I really, really do. Like, I think players like that that can step forward on the ball, that sort of get you the in behind the press and stuff like that. Like, I really like McTominay as much as he's a Man U bastard. I really, really like him. And I think he has to, and even going into the we'll get onto the game Tuesday night, but I think he has to play at right centre half, and it has to be a centre mid that comes in for me personally. But I just don't think. You've seen it in the first game against Czech Republic. I think for McGinn and McTominay to be good in centre mid, they need someone that can really, really sit and really sit well, personally. But we'll come on to that. What did you make of the team against England? Did they give you some confidence? Because it certainly did for me.
I really liked the look of that team when it was named. I immediately had good vibes about that team. I know it's really easy to say in retrospect, but... It just was, for me, it was the team that was kind of set up to go down there and not just look to be like a second class team in that game, but actually be a team that were willing to take the ball, hold on to the ball, not leave us in a position where we had to do like defending for 80, 85 minutes of the game. I thought that for me was like just such a, like, yeah, just. It was the perfect team, and play two centre forwards at Wembley and show that ambition as well. You know, not go with this kind of system where you've got one guy that plays off a striker. Actually, it was just everything about it was really positive. The introduction of Gilmore into the team, who, you know, sadly we're not going to have him against Croatia, but you know, to have him in the side, his third appearance or something like that for the national team, having just turned 20, like. The bravery and the faith showed in those players. I think when he named that team, I think the players themselves must have taken some confidence from that, because they'd be looking at it going, like, he really backs us.
The thing is, for me, the only thing I wanted before the game different, not because I don't think he played as bad as everybody else made out, but I wanted Patterson in the team just because I thought his level of directness would have been amazing at Wembley. But I'm glad that O'Donnell shoved that down my throat and said, "Shut your stupid face, Harry. I'm going to play amazing at Wembley. I'm going to pocket myself with an English come on and get absolutely bitched." I thought O'Donnell, like, the thing is, to a man, like, you very rarely watch a team play that you're supporting and think nobody had a bad game. But I literally wouldn't say a single player on that pitch for Scotland had a bad game. The only person that you could potentially say that was Nisbet, he didn't do anything wrong. He just didn't do anything because he didn't get given enough time. For me, everybody got at least a 7 out of 10. And all I say when we get into these big games, whether it's Hibs or Scotland, I just want them to come off the pitch and I think, you know what, we couldn't have done any more. We left it all out there. Because that's the thing after the first game. I wasn't that bothered because I actually thought to myself, if we play like that against England, we'll get a result. Because England, they were terrible against Croatia. They played very well first 15 minutes, but they were shocking after that. They were there for the taking. And we went and we nearly took them, you know. They've got, like, is it 11 times the amount of population we've got in Scotland? And we went to Wembley and absolutely didded all over them. We get battered everywhere we go, but we absolutely dominate at Wembley. Nice one, lads.
Apart from Wembley. for me, that's the only disappointment. It is a disappointment when I'll be totally honest, I was fucking steaming. I can't really remember much of the game. I woke up the next day and my mates were like, oh no, we actually played. Like, I was like, oh, like, we played all right. I take the draw. And they're like, nah. Like, they're like, aye, we played really well. Like, we really, really could have won. Like, we were really, really good tonight. And I sort of watched the highlights back and stuff on my bed on Saturday morning before we went out again. And I was like, ooh. It reminded me, the last time I had to do that was when, remember the Halloween derby at Tynecastle when it was 0-0. I woke up the next day and thought, oh, Stevie, I went into work the next day and people were like, oh, Stevie Mallon hit the bar twice. I was like, did he? Like, I had to watch that. That was me on Saturday morning. But I felt like we did. The only thing is we've not scored a goal yet.
It's coming. It's coming. The goal's coming. We're creating chances, and we see this with Hibs as well. As long as we're creating chances and guys are getting into the right position, I'm all right with that. And I don't think Dykes or Adams are a natural goal scorer. And you know, in some respects, maybe that means it's not the perfect partnership. But there's other things about the partnership that I really like, and I think they do complement each other well.
Aye.
But let's just remember, like, the way we're defending, I think we need to just get a goal. And we get a goal, that opens the game up so much, and it forces Croatia into a position where they have to come at us, and if there's space against them, I think that's when we'll hurt them.
I agree. I think we'll have too much legs in midfield for Croatia. I've really not been impressed with them at all. I didn't see much of their game, if that's what I'll tell you. I didn't see any of their game against Czech Republic. I think Czech Republic scored a penalty that wasn't a penalty. And then Croatia outclassed, is my understanding of it. But from watching them against England, I think that is it. Brozovic at centre mid, plays for Inter Milan, had a good, really good season at Milan. Thought he was fucking terrible against England. And they played Modric as a 10. I don't know if they played him that way against Czech Republic as well. But he was never in the game. And then when he dropped back to the sort of, I think he ended up moving back to a sort of 6 against England. And he got a bit more in there, but John McGinn's going to be nipping at his head like a little Scottish Terrier dog. He's not going to get time to dictate the play. And for me, I think that's all you need to do. I think if you sit off like a Modric, he could kill you. Like, you know what I mean? He's got the capability to pick a pass to anywhere. He won the Ballon d'Or, buddy, 2 years ago. Like, he is that good. But I think... I think you've seen it. I've only seen the England game, but I believe it was similar against Czech Republic. They just look an ageing side. And I think the biggest thing that the Scotland team has just now is energy. A lot of energy. Hopefully, Friday night hasn't taken like excess amounts out of them. Maybe might need to freshen up a bit. And I watched that Scotland HQ thing that Gordon Smart's hosted. I watched that today. And Ailey Barber was on it, and she said she spoke to Steve Clark, I think yesterday, and he said there was only one position he was thinking about maybe tweaking. This was before the Billy Gilmore news, and I was trying to think through that might be in my own. As much as I thought Stephen O'Donnell was really, really good against England, I think that might have been the one position where he might have been thinking to go slightly more attacking. Because I don't think he would have changed any of the back three. I don't think he would have changed any of the midfield. And I don't think he'd have changed either of the two strikers. So that could be the only one that I would think that he might be looking to tweak. What would you be looking at team-wise against Croatia? Obviously, with Billy Gilmore not being fit as well. Or, sorry, not being available with COVID, so I'm not.
For me, I've not had the chance to say it yet, but I think that Kieran Tierney is genuinely world-class. I think that if he played in the first game, I actually think he would have won that game. And having watched the Croatia game, I actually watched both Croatia games. It's the only team so far, apart from Scotland, I've watched both their games. But I suppose England as well. But I just think they're rubbish. Like, I genuinely think they're rubbish. They played terrible against Czech Republic. They played terrible against England. They just don't look creative at all moving forward, which is really surprising when they've got the likes of that Brozovic and Modric in the team. Have they not got Barisic? Has he been out injured?
He's not going to die.
Fair enough. Well, because injured. I genuinely think that their set pieces were shocking. Like, I don't understand why he wasn't playing, but if he's injured, then fair enough. But genuinely, I think they're there for the taking. I think with Tierney and the team, I don't see us getting beat this game. I think that Tierney's genuinely that much of a difference maker, and I think the impact that he had on the team as a whole, because I think we looked good against Czech Republic, but I think we looked brilliant against England. I think that's literally because of him being in the team.
I think what it does is, I think sort of what I mentioned with McTominay as well, I think it's that, and I think I can't remember what the guy's, was it 91.25? He does the Hibs analysis on Twitter. And he spoke about against Czech Republic that when you've got someone like Tierney there in the back three, Czech Republic sat on the midfield, so he couldn't get the balls into them. So then Tierney will step up with it halfway. And it takes the pressure off Robertson as well. And I think it adds that element, as much as teams know we're going to go heavy down the left side, you don't know who it's going to be. And it means that Robertson can play a bit deeper. Sometimes Robertson ends up being the deeper of the two, and he can actually overlap properly like a left back normally would. And I think that brings the best out of both of them. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, when Tierney was fit this season, I think he played left centre half more for Arsenal than he did left back.
More often than not.
I think they're both, and Robertson's not a left wing back, but I think they're both now playing in positions that they're extremely comfortable with. Whereas I think previously trying to fit that, it felt unnatural, whereas now I think they've got a real understanding on the left side. Because I think even against Czech Republic, Robertson was the, if you look at chances created, they've created more chances than anyone else in the Euros in the first sort of, what do you call it, match day? Sort of created six chances against Czech Republic, obviously didn't take any of them, but Tierney made a real, real difference. Billy Gilmore as well, but do you think he'll be a big miss, Billy Gilmore, tomorrow night, and how would you sort of combat that?
I think Liam will be more. Liam's got an opposite opinion to me. Liam's going to be more articulate, so I thought I'd get in there first. I think that Gilmore was fantastic. I think, especially for a full debut, I think he was absolutely immense. But I think with the system that we're playing, I think that he enhances it, but I don't think he's essential to it. I thought Christie had quite a good game against Czech Republic, and if he went back in and he was creating, pulling strings, then I wouldn't be sad with that. I think he's going to be a miss, but I don't think it's got a major blow that impacts as much as the likes of Robertson or Tierney being out would have done. I don't think it's the biggest possible miss we could have had.
So would it be McTominay into midfield and a new centre-half, or would it be McTominay still at the back and Ryan Christie into midfield for you, Harry? And then we'll get Liam's thoughts.
I'm personally, I do love McTominay at centre-back, but I think with Gilmore being out, I do think it makes more sense to push him forward and then bring in either Cooper or Hendry. They are both, again, I didn't think had bad games, and I think they've actually both played quite well internationally when they have played.
Yeah. I think he'll bring Hendry back in centre half as well. I think he'll push McTominay into midfield and go with pretty much the same team. I think I would probably keep McTominay at centre half though. I think I probably would just and bring Stuart Armstrong into midfield. I know it's a different kind of player, but I think Christie doesn't do the defensive part of the game as well as Armstrong does, and I don't think he's as good an athlete either. And if we're going to overrun their midfield, I think Stuart Armstrong is more of an enabler in doing that than Ryan Christie is. And Christie is a technically wonderful football player, but I don't think he runs through the lines, to use football wanker terminology, quite as well as Stuart Armstrong does. And I think the whole Armstrong-Adams partnership at Southampton, if you look at where a lot of Shea Adams' goals have come from at Southampton, it's been that link-up play with Stuart Armstrong down the right. Stuart Armstrong's one of these guys who I think has probably only had a handful of good games for Scotland and however many 20-odd appearances, maybe 30 appearances. But the games that he has played well, he has been exceptionally good. And I just don't know. There's something about him selecting him that just tells me that he's due a performance. And I know that is no rationale whatsoever for backing a player to play well, but I think he's due a performance. The other guy that
is a wee bit overlooked, I think. Colour, so maybe that's why.
Similar levels of intelligence, because apparently he's a really bright guy. I hear that all the time. No, I'm not joking. The guy that's gone really understated from Friday is Callum McGregor, and he didn't start the first game, did he? He didn't play the first game.
Nope.
I thought he had a really excellent game in possession on Friday. Like Harry wouldn't give it anyone less than a 7, but I did think McGregor was particularly good. And I think if he sits, he is disciplined enough to allow us to play two more forward-thinking midfielders. So I think that opens the window to McGinn, McTominay. I mean, I wouldn't even put it past Steve Clarke, based on his performance in the Netherlands, to throw David Turnbull in there. I don't think that's out of the realms of possibility.
I was just about to say, after seeing Gilmore, I think there's a lot to be said for confidence and cockiness on a football park. David Turnbull out of, let's say, the Celtic options, him and Christie had a better season. And I think also just a freshness in the team as well. To then, I guess, what you said about Armstrong, like you say, he's maybe not always been great for Scotland. I wouldn't be against throwing Turnbull in. I do think he's more of a centre mid than Ryan Christie is. I think he obviously played very much a centre mid role for Motherwell. I think he's been more advanced than that when he's played for Celtic. But I was really surprised Christie got hooked at half time against Czech Republic. I don't think the formation played against Czech Republic, that sort of 3-4-3, works when you've. I think if you're playing 3-4-3, you need to play like genuine pace. Is like the sort of two number 10s off of the one striker. Like Chelsea done it when they won the league. I think they had Pedro and Hazard off of can't fucking remember who the striker was. But whereas when we played sort of Armstrong and Christie, and it just meant we were super boxy and just couldn't. I felt like when Czech Republic did have the ball, we couldn't counter. But I think for me, I would go Turnbull. I would definitely keep McTominay at centre half, and I would go Turnbull. I think, why not? Do you think, Liam, obviously you were going to speak about Billy Gilmore, just how impressed were you with him, with Billy Gilmore on Friday night?
So, a couple of weeks ago, we hold my hands up and tweeted that I wasn't all aboard the hype train, because I wasn't, and I think he's a fantastic wee footballer, but I just didn't think that he'd enough credit in the bank to be selected ahead of some of the guys that are already in that squad. I was really happy to eat a bit of humble pie on Friday, because he was magnificent. He did all the things that we know that he can do. And it's that, you know, everyone's talked about the ability to take the ball in tight spaces, turn and get a pass off. It allows you to keep possession. It allows you to keep the ball moving. It keeps the opposition guessing. He's quite an un-Scottish player in a lot of ways as well. And I think when you're playing against international teams, I think it really helps to have someone who's a bit un-Scottish and a bit different from a lot of the other guys that are in the team, because he's got athletes either side of him. He doesn't need to necessarily be the best athlete, but what he does do is he just controls the ball so well, and he really can pick a pass as well. He just exceeded my expectations, but not in doing anything that I didn't know he could do. He just did the things he does do exceptionally well.
Would you... We were just speaking about Luka Modric, almost a similar mode to Modric, not saying obviously not even close to that level just now, but just playing style in the sense of that Modric can grace any team in the world. He has graced any team in the world. But he's not big. He's not particularly strong. He's not particularly quick. But when he's got the ball, good luck trying to get off you. Get off and he can probably keep it off you in a fucking telephone box. Like, he's that good. And I think Gilmore is probably of a similar ilk to that. One thing I did notice... And
after 12 pints of Guinness, I called on the schemes Luka Modric. That was my wisdom on Friday night.
One thing I did notice that got called out, I think it should be, is that I think he's the first... Him and Aaron Hickey have both come through, as much as Aaron Hickey's shite. And they've both come through the sort of SFA performance schools. And I think if we're starting to see good players come through them, then hopefully can be the start of another good batch of Scottish players, because we've obviously got the likes of Robertson, McGinn, Tierney, Adams, Armstrong, all playing key roles for teams in the English Premiership, and if we can keep producing good players, then that can only be a good thing for the future. So Croatia game is tomorrow night. A win should see us through. As we're recording, Austria have just beat Ukraine, which means in that group, the team that finished third only got 3 points. And in the 8 o'clock games tonight, as long as there is a winner in either of the two games, the third place team in that group will only have 3 points as well, which would mean a win tomorrow sees you into third place. Well, potentially better, depending on the results in the in the group, but a win would definitely see you into the last 16. Will we get that victory?
Yeah, do you want the hot take? Do you want the hottest of hot takes? The hot take is so hot it's going to burn. It's not going to happen, but I'm going to call it anyway, because if it happens, then I'm going to be a national hero. I think that Scotland go through and England go out. I think England will lose 2-0, which will be bad enough goal difference to see them not be in the top third place finish. And I think that it'll be enough, because we'll win 1-0, and that'll be a big enough swing for us to finish above them and beat them out of the competition. So Scotland make the knockout phases and England don't.
I'm going to agree with that to the extent that I could totally see Scotland winning 2-0 and England losing 2-0. But the chances are they're 99.9% going to go through. Because, like I say, if either of these games...
I thought they'd only gone three. The thing is, they're finishing third, you're finishing second, that's the end of it.
I don't even think it's that unrealistic an option. I just get the feeling that Czech Republic might rest players because they know they're guaranteed to go through. So I think they might rest players, and actually wouldn't surprise me actually if England put a few past them.
In our group, we've had the most shots at goal in our group, and England have had the least.
Have we had the most shots in the tournament?
I've had the most in the tournament.
I'm pretty sure I've seen that. It might have been the group, but I'm sure it's
the match days. I think you may be right. Aye.
We had 19 shots against the Czech Republic, and I'm sure it was 11 the other night.
I'm maybe right against saying 41.
Oh no, you're right.
I'm full of positivity normally, but I just think I've been in this place too many times before with Scotland, and I think there is going to be something that lets us down tomorrow, and I think unfortunately we're going to lose the game 2-1, and I think it might not be I think there might be some injustice that results in us losing that game 2-1. So a lot to happen between now and tomorrow, potentially more issues with COVID protocols, there's potentially, I don't know, a bit of a balancing act after Croatia got that decision against them against the Czech Republic. I don't know. I just think there's going to be something tomorrow that does us. So I'm sorry to be the doom merchant, but I just can't see it happening.
There is a bit of me that would rather see what I'm saying about that result tonight. There's a bit of me that would be like, I'd rather we go into the game thinking, right, we need to win and then see what happens in the other games, as opposed to knowing, like, if we win, then it's done. Like, because I'd sort of accepted, right, we're going to win, but we're still not going to go through. But that's sort of what my head had been saying since the weekend. But I think, to sort of summarise, Czech Republic game disappointing, England game very promising. And I think if anyone said to you, you've got a point from the first two games, and if you beat Croatia, you go through, I think everyone would have taken that, in all honesty. I think this, ideally, you would have had three, potentially four, but I think a point is a pretty good show. With two good performances as well, albeit the Czech Republic result was disappointing. Finally, before we go, any argument for Kevin Nisbet to see a little bit more game time than what he has done so far? Maybe not from the start, but...
If we're losing and Shea Adams isn't playing well, then obviously throw him on, because why not? Just freshen it up. But I don't think there's any reason why he displaces Adams for the team, to be honest.
Fun fact, a Rangers
fan... Forrest and Fraser have been on the bench. Forrest and Fraser are not even getting off the bench. It's a funny one, eh? Like, because I thought they would have seen some decent minutes this tournament. I think, to be honest, if we're ahead, it's more likely that one of them comes on to use their pace to get in behind. I think, yeah, Harry's right. I think the only way Nisbet comes on is if we're chasing a goal.
Yeah, I would. Like I said earlier on, just sort of what Ailey Barbard said on that show earlier, I've got a feeling one of them. I can't see any position where, obviously this was before Gilmore got COVID, so I couldn't see any other position where he could potentially have been wanting to change it, unless it was to get McTominay back in the midfield. So I've got a feeling we might see a winger at right wing back as opposed to Stephen O'Donnell, which would be incredibly harsh, but I think that might be a change we see. I would like to see Nisbet get a bit more game time. One of my Rangers supporter mates actually said that, highlighted that he felt like Nisbet should have been on about the hour mark the other night. He said he felt like Dykes looked fucking knackered and he thought Nisbet could have come on and done a job. I didn't really agree, but like I said, I can't really remember much, so just sort of went, aye, sure. Hopefully we'll get the job done tomorrow. Hopefully we're back next week talking about Scotland still being in the competition. I don't know when we'd be playing, but I do know that the last 16 games don't even kick off till Saturday. There's a couple of days break, I think, Thursday, Friday, so it's a bit disappointing, really. Don't know what the fuck I'm going to do on Thursday and Friday, but we'll be back next week. Hopefully Greg will be back with us, and there might even have been a little bit of Hibs activity in the next week, who knows.
I've got a suggestion. Instead of doing a high be the week, I think we should do a video of the week, because me and Liam have said one, we can go over it again now, and then you just have to come up with one. So my video of the week, and we can quote tweet them on Twitter, Can you do the thing where you quote tweet something into a reply? Because I can't do that. I don't know if it's an Android issue, but
not got a fucking Scooby Doo, mate.
Never tried it.
Mate, I don't know how to do it. So if we can work out how to do that, we can do that. But
right, anyway, I've got my video. I know what I'm going for.
Well, I've started talking.
I know, I'm just doing.
So finish. Jesus.
I'm just doing. So we're good to go.
So my video of the week is 2-1 Hibs.
Liam, mine's is the 13th birthday. Mine's is the 13th birthday. Back with the boy trying to start the rotary motor. Fucking. You know,
I hope folk are watching this on YouTube. I'm going to go for you. Just a shite Abby Burns getting fucking belted out to the what the Shakespeare there, because I was fucking part of that chat. That was a good fucking laugh. Don't know if I was part of when it got videoed, but that was getting sung at various points during the week. Special shout outs to any video that references Harry Kane slavering on his shoes, any reference to eating spaghetti without utensils.
Shout out to Joe because they conducted some very, very funny interviews. Most of the funny interviews did stem from Joe, so shout out to them.
Shout out to Tyrone Mings being a shite Grant Hanley.
That was class part of it.
Shout out to ITV only being able to show the Andrew Robertson interview because the Scottish fans oversang any of the other interviews post-match and they couldn't hear the players.
Shout out to Scott Brown for smiling whilst Gary Neville had a turn face.
Do you know what? Shout out to Scottish football Twitter. In fact, no, just Scottish Twitter over the weekend. It's good enough when Hibs win. And obviously, like you say, we've got our wee Hibs echo chamber on our Twitter because that's sort of who we follow and who follows us. But just across the platform and on Facebook and down in London, it was just absolutely unbelievable over the weekend. And hopefully we get to carry it on for a little while longer. But yeah, lads, thank you very much once again for joining us. Catch you next week. Bye.